When I finally went back to Amsterdam last year after the pandemic break, I was struck by how much had changed. Dutch ingenuity and pragmatism continues to shape the capital city of the Netherlands as it grapples with resident concerns about overtourism and finding a way to manage its live-and-let-live reputation with the hard realities of managing a big city. Dutch tour guide Dennis Herets joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves for an update on what's new in his city and what travelers can expect on their next visit. Dennis, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, hey, Dennis, you like to say that Amsterdam has so much more to offer than what a guidebook can tell you. What do you mean by that?
Well, the guidebook will mostly send you into the more touristic areas. And when I talk about what Amsterdam has more to offer, I'm actually talking about the neighborhoods where you can see local life, feel local life, meet the locals, see where we go, and follow our footsteps. Especially in Amsterdam, people arrive at Central Station and they all follow the same line, the same sort of path. And sometimes I take guests 5 or 10 minutes to the right or left, and then they're so surprised of what they see. And for me, it's like a normal thing, you know.
It's so true, Dennis. People come in, whether they're flying or taking the train, they end up, you know, from the airport, taking the train into the main station. You step out from the main station and there before you is Amsterdam, and you've got the Dam Rack going right up to Dam Square and the Royal Palace. There's Hooters. You know, there's the Sex Museum. There's the Canal Tours. It's all so predictable. And you just walk 10 minutes either way, and you have a whole different world. Now, Amsterdam has been really dealing, I think, with the impact of tourism. And like a number of cities in Europe, it's just getting out of hand. I remember before the pandemic, the big discussion in Amsterdam was, are the local people going to get angry with the tourists for messing up their neighborhoods? How is Amsterdam dealing with the crowd problem?
Well, especially that problem is downtown. And with downtown, I'm mostly talking about the red light district area. Sometimes on certain evenings, it's so crowded in the red light district and these streets are so narrow that the police cannot guarantee safety anymore. So quite a lot of things have changed there. One of the main things is that I, as a guide, I'm not allowed to do any tours in the red light district anymore. Which for me wasn't such a big thing because most of my guests didn't want to go there anyway because I could always convince them to go into a neighborhood. But there's quite a lot of big companies that for them it's quite a big thing because they were promoting their red light district to us. So yeah, there's quite a big change there.
Last time I was in the red light district, because I got to admit it's an intriguing area, there was a campaign that was just a reminder to all the visitors, hey, this is a neighborhood. People live here. That was the big challenge, was just letting people know, this is not a museum, this is not an amusement park, this is a neighborhood. There's a daycare here, there's a senior home there, there's, you know, people that are going about their daily life, and there's that overlay of all the tourists, all the marijuana shops, all the prostitutes. It's an amazing mix in Amsterdam, and we have to remember, it is a neighborhood. People are living there.
Yeah, 5,000 people, actually, and also families with children. And because of the prostitutes and the coffee shops, it for some people, it feels like an open-air festival. So they tend to do all these things on the street that you would normally not do on a street nowhere. But there, suddenly, it all sort of happening. It's also, I know for a lot of locals, not the neighborhood to go to anymore, which is a pity, because it's when it comes to architecture and history, it's beautiful.
Oh, I know it's beautiful. It's the oddest thing. You can look at the rabble on the streets. You can look at what's being sold in the windows. And then you can look at the gables up above. And you can see three different zones. When you look at the architecture in the gables, and you know a little bit of Dutch history, you realize this was the springboard for world trade back in the day, in the Golden Age. And it's a red light district today because it was a sailor's quarter a long time ago. But today it translates into, I think, what the Dutch call nuisance tourists. You know, there's different kinds of tourists, and I know all over Europe, tourist boards try to shape the clientele by promoting this instead of that. And Amsterdam is realizing, yeah, there's a little bit of money in people coming in to go to the Heineken Brewery Tour and to wander through the red light district, but there's a lot of hen parties and stag parties and cheap airplane rides into town that bring mobs of nuisance tourists. What's the dynamic there? What is the city trying to do to moderate that situation?
Well, one of the things is actually when it comes to coffee shops, there's actually a new rule that only people who can demonstrate that they live in the Netherlands, that they can enter a coffee shop. It's one of these rules. It is an official rule, although it doesn't really apply in Amsterdam because every city has the opportunity to decide themselves how to deal with it. So even today, okay, I see lines of tourists in front of the coffee shops.
But and we should mention, Dennis, excuse me, that the coffee shops, they don't sell coffee. They're selling marijuana. And that's
yes,
the kind of the name for a marijuana shop. And the Dutch, I mean, they used to have a problem in the red light district of too many hard drug addicts. And the Dutch decided, let's focus on our hard drug addicted population. Let's take the marijuana out of the crime equation. And they essentially allowed marijuana use in these coffee shops. The reason, it was not pro-marijuana, I think it was a pragmatic move to be able to deal with the hard drug problem. Is that your take on it?
Yes, for sure. You talk about hard drugs. It's actually the heroin, which was a problem in the 70s and the 80s, and the government decided to focus on that problem and leave the people alone that were smoking marijuana because they weren't the big problem, the big issue there. Yeah, and having coffee shops means that I, as a local, I don't have to buy anything in a dark alley from somebody that I don't know. I can actually go into a shop. The shops have a lot of regulations. You know, you have to be 18. You cannot buy more than 5 grams because if you do so, they see you as a dealer. So it became quite a normal thing, and they were able to deal with that problem.
And as you said, it's highly regulated. You can't advertise it. You're never going to see buy two, get one free in the window. But, you know, they're not selling coffee, that's for sure. But that's one reason Amsterdam is on a lot of people's bucket list when they go to Europe, because they want to check out this phenomenon. And as you mentioned, they're moderating it now. And I think the city is pretty good at doing that by licensing, right? Each year, they can decide where they want to give license for this. And if they want to change a neighborhood, they just stop allowing licenses for sex workers and for marijuana.
Yeah, in the last 10 years, I've seen the amount of coffee shops going down rapidly. And I also know that nobody's allowed to open a new coffee shop. You are only allowed to take over an existing one. So I could show you streets which used to be full of coffee shops, and now there's none. So
right,
the whole, it's all changed in that street.
But you know,
street.
Dennis, the bottom line is, it's just a very out-of-the-box, practical solution or way of dealing with a very persistent problem. This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're exploring what's new in Amsterdam with Dutch tour guide Dennis Herritz. And he's called Amsterdam home now for 25 years, and he's updating us on what's changing in the popular and always intriguing capital city of the Netherlands. Dennis's website is lovemycitytours.com. And I've spent days with Dennis, prowling the back streets of Amsterdam, updating my guidebooks, and Dennis really knows his stuff. Dennis, this is so interesting now in Europe that crowding is a big problem. And I know when I go to Amsterdam, there's an issue of short-term rentals, like Airbnb, that's driving the cost of living up for people who would normally rent an apartment in the old center. What have you noticed with the influx of tourism and the popularity of Airbnb kind of services where tourists can rent a little apartment in a short-term way?
Well, in the beginning, there was a big change, a big influence, thanks to Airbnb. At the moment, it's less because city council changed quite a lot of rules. At this moment, you are only allowed to rent out your apartment for 30 days max per year. And every time you do so, you have to let city council know. Before, people could rent out their apartment for the entire year. Which means I knew people that, you know, two of them would move into one apartment and they would rent out the other one. And in Amsterdam, it's quite easy to ask 100 or 200 euros per night. But they have changed all of that.
And is that because of the opportunity for landlords to make more money by short-term rentals?
Yep.
Yeah. And that changes the character of a neighborhood. So as consumers looking for an alternative to an expensive hotel room, we might think, oh, Airbnb, that's great. But there is an ethical issue because it does tend to have a negative impact on existing communities. And the irony is the charm of the existing community is why we want to go there first. And if everybody, you know, outbids them for a place to sleep, there's no more of that charm left.
No.
Many cities are dealing with this. Dennis, we've got a few more minutes, and I'd like to just talk about what's new from a visitor's point of view in Amsterdam. What's the latest with the museums? Is there any changes we should know about for the coming year?
The Amsterdam Museum is still closed because of renovation. That will probably take 1 or 2 years.
And that's a great museum, by the way, the Amsterdam City Museum, right in the old center of town. And that's a shame that that's closed. But whenever it's closed, it means there's good things going on and it'll be worth waiting for when it does reopen.
Yeah, I follow it because I'm very interested and I've seen what they are going to do and it's going to be amazing. It's just a pity that sometimes people miss it because it's actually in the busiest part of the city. But besides that, no big changes in any of the museums.
One thing I would say is everybody wants to see Anne Frank, Van Gogh, and the Rijksmuseum. And I would say all three of those, you should figure that a reservation in advance, a timed entry is essentially required. Don't even try to go there without booking in advance, right?
Yep, especially the Anne Frank House, because they have their tickets online only 6 weeks in advance. And you want to put that in your agenda and be there at the moment the tickets go online. Because they can go quite fast. The Rijks and the Van Gogh Museum, you can book that any time a year. But I tend to tell my guests all the time, please remember that we have so much more museums and small ones. So there's quite a lot of museums left.
Oh, beautiful little museums. Pipe museums, houseboat museums, Bible museums, Tropico Museum. There's so many great museums to see. And if you're frustrated by the Anne Frank House, I would remind you, yes, it's great to see the Anne Frank House, but the serious museum about the Dutch resistance and that whole experience is the Dutch Resistance Museum. It's newly renovated. It is a delightful museum, and there's never a crowd there. You can just step right up, and you'll feel like you're only the only person in that place while everybody else is frustrated to try to get into Anne Frank's.
Yeah, and don't forget, it's also in a very beautiful area, the Jewish Cultural Quarter. So that's definitely worth to pay his visit.
You know, one thing I found is in a trend in Amsterdam was chef's choice menus at trendy popular restaurants. There's a lot of happening restaurants that are very, very popular. And I found they don't have a menu traditionally where you select different things. You just say, I want 3 courses or 5 courses, and the chef will serve you whatever he wants. Have you noticed that in restaurants?
Yes. Yeah. Depends on what you're looking for. We have the best family restaurants where it feels like you're actually sitting in their living room. And we have the restaurants you just mentioned. These are places where you'll probably be for like 2 or 3 hours. Every time you get something, they will exactly explain you how it's made and the ingredients. So when customers ask me, can you give us some dinner recommendations, which I'm happy to do, I always tell them, well, you can go 2 ways. You want to go sit in the living room, you spend 45 minutes, maybe 1 hour, or you want something that sort of fills your evening, and then you go to the more, at what some people call fine dining, but actually it's chef choice, and you only decide how many courses you want.
And it's fine dining, but it's not over-the-top expensive, I think, because it's economic for them to just serve one menu to everybody, and it's just quality food. Coming away from my research visit just last year, it occurred to me there's 4 things you need to reserve before coming to Amsterdam for the typical tourist. If you want to see Anne Frank, Van Gogh, and Rijksmuseum for the Rembrandts, reserve that in advance. And if you want a popular one of these chef's choice restaurants, reserve that in advance also, because it's really frustrating for a visitor to find that, oh, those are all booked out. So when you know you're going to be there and you want a memorable meal, do that. But those are the 4 things you need to reserve in advance. Everything else just about you can do on the fly. Is there anything else we should know about that would be really important and you would want a reservation in advance?
I would say private boats. And that would be the only thing I would add to your list. I would say if you didn't experience Amsterdam from the water, you definitely missed out on something. I also know for a lot of my guests, it's the highlight of their trip. And there are not so many private boats to rent. So also that one, I advise. Yeah, okay. Advise people.
And
to
that's
book
a, is that a do it yourself? Do you captain the boat yourself, or does do you have a guided tour on the boat?
A guided tour. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so that's a good advice. Other big news, Dennis, is the new underground connection to North Amsterdam on the other side of the river.
Yes, quite amazing, especially. Who digs a tunnel underneath a city center which is more than 750 years old? It was quite a challenge. But now it's amazing how people from the north can get downtown in like less than 10 minutes. And I see a lot of people using it, not just locals, but also a lot of visitors, because they can travel through the city quite quickly. For example, from downtown to the neighborhood called De Pijp, where you have one of our best food markets. You get yes. out of the subway and you're there.
Yeah, that's so exciting. Dennis Harris is a local tour guide who offers custom walking and bike tours of Amsterdam and nearby, including private boat tours on the canals. He's updating us on what's new this year in Amsterdam on Travel with Rick Steves. Dennis's website is lovemycitytours.com, and he spells his last name G-E-R-R-I-T-S. Dennis, I could talk all day with you. It's so interesting. Thank you, Dennis Hedditz, for joining us. If we could just wrap up our discussion, as a tour guide and somebody who loves Amsterdam, what are you most excited about what's going on in Amsterdam right now, both for residents and for visitors?
I'm most excited about the projects around the IJ River. This is the big river behind Central Station. This used to be the harbor of Amsterdam. And this area next to the river is now one of the hot spots in Amsterdam. A lot of new apartment buildings, a lot of festivals, a lot of nice restaurants at the water, a lot of raves in the weekend. A lot of artists have their studios there. If you would have asked me 20 years ago, will you ever take your guests to the old harbor, which as a child, there was a no-go area. And now I love to take the people there. So it's the IJ River behind Central Station, and everything, all the projects on both mm-hmm. sides of that river are amazing. And I get very excited when I'm there as a local, and I feel the same with my guests.
And we should remind our listeners that's I spelled I-J. Is that right? I-J.
Yes, it is.
The IJ River. And you know, when everybody's going to be at the train station and everybody's inclined to turn right and go into the center. But before you do that, turn left and stand on the balcony overlooking the river from the train station, and you'll see what Dennis is talking about. And that's a reminder that all over Europe, they're taking formerly run-down industrial wastelands and turning them into really energetic, revitalized people zones. And that's a beautiful thing about traveling in Amsterdam or elsewhere in Europe. Dennis Hedditz, dank u wel.
Alsjeblieft.
And hope to see you next time I'm in Amsterdam. Thanks, Dennis.
Yeah, I hope so too. You're welcome. Tot ziens.
Polynesians have lived on the world's most remote islands in the Pacific for at least 1,000 years. We'll delve into the different explanations for how they settled Hawaii, Tahiti, Easter Island, and New Zealand. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.